This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The town of Charlottesville, Virginia, garnered international attention over the weekend after a massive march of right-wing, self-proclaimed white nationalists, Nazis, and fascists marched in the streets, ostensibly to defend a Confederate statue. A 32-year-old white woman named Heather Heyer was killed and more than a dozen others badly injured when a car driven by one of the Nazi marchers appeared to deliberately plow into counter-protesters. Hundreds of people also marched KKK style with torches as the sun set on the town. Overall, 35 people were injured amid reports that local police failed to intervene. President Donald Trump made remarks condemning, quote, the egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. Well, what really happened on the streets of Charlottesville over the weekend? Joining me to tell all is Chenjerai Kumanyika, assistant professor in the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies and a correspondent for this program. Welcome to the show, Chenjerai.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So explain the context within which you were present in Charlottesville and give us a sort of sketch of what you saw, a summary of the day's events that you witnessed.
Well, I was there in Charlottesville since on Friday afternoon. I got there because I wanted to cover and understand what was about to happen. And so I, you know, attended a church. There was a church gathering at St. Paul's Memorial Church the evening, and Dr. Cornell West and Reverend Tracy Blackman, Reverend Sekou Osagyefo, and other, and then all of the local clergy were there. Many local clergy who were part of the resistance in Charlottesville were there. That was a church service that started at 7 p.m. and ended when we learned that the church was basically surrounded by church-wielding white supremacists.
So did you also then find yourself at some point on the streets where these white supremacists were marching and where counter-protesters were also attempting to kind of hold the line?
Right. Well, so what I'm describing to you happened Friday night. This is August Friday, which is the day before the main protest. And then that night ended already. I mean, for a group that's saying that they're coming to peacefully protest, you know, the removal of a statue. The question that I think people have to ask is, why would you come with torches to a church that's nowhere near those statues where people are inside praying, you know? And then the next day was the official rally. Their permit was from 12 to 5 p.m., but we never even made it to 12 p.m. because by 10 p.m. in Emancipation Park, all hell had broken loose. Probably over 300 of these Nazis had assembled at that time, and they were, you know, just, they came in their own sort of makeshift riot gear. They had helmets, baseball helmets, you know, shields, bats, sticks, guns, knives. There were also these other kinds of militia groups there, various kinds of, I mean, there were these groups like the Vanguard and something about Europa. There's one group I can't remember. It has Europa in the name, and like the traditional socialist workers party or something like that. And then all kind of Confederate, and they were wielding big swastika flags, Confederate flags. I mean, this was like explicit bigotry and hate. You know, I think when I walked up, they were like, you know, yelling F you faggot and all kinds of N-word, and so eventually they were throwing things to provoke the counter protesters. They were throwing bottles of water and things like that back and forth. And the police didn't appear to be doing anything to really stop this.
And in fact, ProPublica had a very good report by a journalist who documented the fact that there was very little police intervention. In fact, police simply stood back and watched and almost ceded security to some of these armed militia types, because it appeared that their goal was to ensure no clashes between police and protesters. And so effectively, they allowed clashes between protesters and counter-protesters.
Right. Well, the last Klan rally was July 8th, and I witnessed that one as well.
That's when we had you on our show to talk about that. Our audience can go to our website, risingupwithsonali.com, to watch Chenjerai's report in July. And in fact, we did talk, Chenjerai, didn't we, that this other bigger event was going to be happening.
That's right. And, after that, as we saw on that report, we talked about the tear gas that happened, the fact that counter-protesters, people protesting the Klan, were tear gassed. And so I don't know if they were interested in, maybe they were, I don't know if this was a response to that. Some have suggested that they were saying, okay, if you don't want to, you don't want to, for us to do our policing work, we're not going to do anything. But this, where this became really disturbing was, the before 12, Emancipation Park, which is where the Robert E. Lee statue is, had descended into complete chaos. There were, people just tear gas being thrown from both. I saw tear gas come from the side where the Confederate Nazi types were. And, I have this video I have of this, it's just crazy. And so they eventually, the state of emergency was declared. And after that is when it became really dangerous, because now this group of Confederates broke into smaller units and were driving around and terrorizing people and beating people up intermittently.
And is that the car plowed into a crowd, killing Heather Hare? And by the way, we'll be showing that video, just a warning to our TV audience. It's a little bit frightening to watch if you haven't seen, so you might want to, turn away if you have children watching. But yeah, basically, is this one the car plowed into the crowd?
Yeah, I mean, that was afterwards, yeah. And then I didn't witness that eyewitness, but reports started coming back from people who were in the area because it was a few blocks away. I mean, all of this is happening in like a not that big of a space. And people said first that we just got the reports that the car had driven into people, and then later we got reports that the woman, Heather, the person had died. We didn't know who it was. We later found out it's Heather Hare. She's a paralegal in the area. So again, if you're protesting a statue, why is a car driving into protesters? These people were extremely organized. They were organized in the way that they assembled with the torchlit rally the night before. They were organized when they assembled at the park. They brought weapons. There was also this group there, the Three Percenters. Again, I don't know that they were involved in any attack, but these are guys who were dressed like militia, just carrying AR-15s. I saw about 10 of them. So at any given moment, there were people driving, there were people walking around with these Confederate Nazi types who had guns. At times you couldn't really I couldn't distinguish them from the state police because everybody's a militia.
Wow. So Heather Hare, this 32-year-old paralegal, was killed. We now know she was a Bernie Sanders supporter. In a way, has sort of become a martyr to the sort of counter movement against the fascist right wing movement. But there were also other horrific casualties. This photo of a young African American man in the air, shoes flying, while a car hit him. That photo has gone viral, and it turns out that he pushed his fiance out of the way to save her life. And they were, in fact, even connected to Heather Hare. Heather Hare was his fiance's friend. So this, and he broke his leg, luckily actually survived that. We also heard about the brutal beating, and actually saw a video of the beating of DeAndre Harris. While Heather Hare was a young white woman, there were a lot of also African Americans and people of color who I'm sure sustained very serious injuries, right?
Right. Yeah, I heard about it. I heard about another reporter who was hit in the head. I mean, I want to be clear. All these false equivalencies are being made where like there was violence on both sides. These they're being called alt-right groups came to hurt people. They came with the gear to protect themselves. They were aggressively went and to this church in the park afterwards. They were driving around. They drove a car into peaceful protesters who were nowhere near the I want to be clear that where this car hit, that wasn't even near the statue with other things. That was protesters somewhere else.
And the person has been identified as a, Nazi sympathizer. I suppose we should just call him a Nazi, James Alex Fields.
Right. He's somebody who was earlier in the park with these groups. So this is a group. So this is a terrorist group who came to Charlottesville and used their car to attack and successfully murdered someone. You know,
Ginger, right, this is ISIS strategy, right? I mean, this is what we've seen. This is the tactic we've seen in some European cities where people proclaiming allegiance to the Islamic State have plowed their car into crowds of innocent folks.
Yeah, and I just...
If we're going to have equivalency, right, maybe that's the one we should be talking about.
I can't imagine how, you know, people aren't able to see this, and how even... If you look at, you know, the Meet the Press interview that happened, you know, some of these politicians are still kind of playing touchy and still trying to do this fluency thing, not wanting to take issue with Trump's comments and unwilling to indict. They're like, well, there was violence on both sides. I mean, it's really, and I think when they do that, what they're actually revealing is their beholdenness to these groups, that they don't feel comfortable to just denounce these groups, even when there are people. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of the history of the American military, but there's people who gave their lives to fight against Nazism in this country. And these people are walking around with open Nazi flags, and you haven't really seen, and the president fails to denounce that.
Let's actually play excerpts from his remarks that he made at a press conference that was supposed to be addressing veterans' health care, ironically. And this is what the president had to say. He seemed to sort of veer off script once in a while.
But we're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides, It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. We have so many incredible things happening in our country. So when I watch Charlottesville, to me, it's very, very sad. I want to salute the great work of the state and local police in Virginia, incredible people, law enforcement, incredible people, and also the National Guard. They've really been working smart and working hard. We want to get the situation straightened out in Charlottesville, and we want to study it. And we want to see what we're doing wrong as a country where things like this can happen. My administration is restoring the sacred bonds of loyalty between this nation and its citizens. But our citizens must also restore the bonds of trust and loyalty between one another. We must love each other, respect each other, and cherish our history and our future together. So important. We have to respect each other. Ideally, we have to love each other.
And that's President Donald Trump speaking at a press conference over the weekend, responding to the Charlottesville clashes, where he basically said that he condemned the egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. He also went on to praise law enforcement and said that his administration was going to study what happened. Chandrai, we did have some Republican senators and other lawmakers kind of be embarrassed by the fact that Trump refused to name white supremacy as such. Even Orrin Hatch said we should call evil by its name. Do you think they went far enough?
Well, I think the question that you have to ask is, you know, it's not very hard to denounce explicit hate of that nature that resulted in the death.
It shouldn't be.
The white supremacist policies that are being, you know, like you look at how the Department of Justice is operating under Jeff Sessions. You look at the travel ban and the policy toward Muslims. You look at the policy around, you know, mass incarceration, the voter suppression that's still taking place, continues in the GOP and is being now renewed. And there's a new commission to look at voter rolls. I mean, all those reek of white supremacy. And so you have these politicians who will say, I'm against hate, and act like they're giving ground because they did that, but they're not doing anything about those policies. And some of them, and that's only a few of them, have even come out. And they'll, you know, it's different to say, I denounce white supremacy than to say, I denounce hate. Even the hate is a little vague. So I look at those comments very skeptically.
And of course, they're also taking aim at affirmative action in colleges. You're right. The actions actually are very much in line with what white supremacists are asking for. Now, Chenjerai, let's just try to identify who was actually there, because it just sounds like this just mishmash of folks. And I suppose that was the whole idea, that the rally was called Unite the Right. And so you had the Confederacy flag wavers, the ones who basically want the South to rise up again. You had those who were overtly calling themselves Nazis because they sported swastikas. You know, you had the ones who said that they are white nationalists. Maybe they're all trying to unite under this alt-right umbrella. Were there, I'm assuming there were people who were still members of the Klan. Richard Spencer, the ostensible leader of the alt-right, was there, was actually arrested. Does that sort of encompass it all? Was this the sort of grand Woodstock of right-wing fascists?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you had definitely, I saw people with traditional Workers' Party out on uniforms on True Cascadia. I saw some folks from Identity Europa. Vanguard, I wasn't familiar with, but I saw that the guy James Field was with a group that was called Vanguard America. And they're all these kind of, yeah, like you described it very well, right? They see themselves as the cutting edge of right-wing fascists. And then Spencer's group, which is has a much more benign name, the National Policy Institute, I think, but is, in fact, you know, his white supremacists. And one thing I really want to point out, too, is that the image we've seen in the media, like if you look at the image that you see, the photo that circulates of them at the torch rally, they look kind of like these clean cut sort of khaki and white shirt wearing, white supremacists. That is not at all who showed up on Saturday. Who showed up was a much more, you know, I would say people who would typically be called rednecks, you know, type of people. Type of element, and that's really who showed up. And so Richard Spencer has tried to present himself as someone who believes in white nationalism, but is not.
He's the preppy and racist, and there were also the sort of more traditional, stereotypical racists out there. Let's just say.
No, I mean it was. I mean, when I walked up, they were out there yelling "F you, faggot," and all of that. It was pure explicit hate.
And in fact, some people, there was a young man by the name of Peter, whose Eastern European, I think, last name is hard to pronounce, something that usually only foreign-born Americans contend with. He is one of the people who was identified, because there's efforts now on Twitter to identify these folks and out them to their employers. But he basically said, "I don't consider myself a racist." Let's talk about how they do see themselves. Because some of them will straight up say, you know, the white race is superior, but others, like perhaps the clean-cut preppy ones, what are they saying? Do they feel that they're simply standing up for white Americans because white Americans are really the true oppressed victims of this country?
Well, I think the idea that they don't see themselves as racist, I mean, I never took it seriously, but after what I witnessed, there was so much explicit hate on these groups, and they were so unified on that. On that count, that I think that that's just something that they say in certain spaces. But they one chant that they've been using, this blood and soil chant, one chant that they said a lot was "you will not replace us." And I think that really gets to the core of their fears about diversity, about, you know, different groups that are, you know, some of which are already here, actually.
But there's a saying, I'm not sure who to attribute this quote to, but it goes something like, when you are privileged, equality feels like oppression.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's another similar Thomas Sowell quote that sounds a lot like that, too. But I think these folks, yeah, definitely fear that their way of life, their culture is going to be erased and their power. I think for people who are in, you know, trying to resist these groups, what I saw this weekend really poses an interesting new kind of challenge for us to think about. I mean, a lot of us just are like, why don't we just ignore these groups? One thing that was clear to me is that the violent, aggressive nature of these groups and the fact that this is a movement growing full of young blood, young people, really, you know, that can't be ignored. And yet we have to think about how to engage them. And it's tricky because they have studied leftist tactics. And so they
look
kind
up
of,
to Saul Alinsky and Martin Luther King Jr. and try to emulate their tactics.
That's right. So they kind of are prepared for protesters to come out and say we don't like Nazis, and they kind of outmaneuvered the police in a lot of ways. I mean, so you have to think. I think we're going to have to really be creative. And, you know, it's also there's an interesting conversations that are going to have to be had about nonviolence. You know, I mean, I'm someone who generally feels that nonviolence is even a superior tactic as well as a principle for some people. But, you know, there was a real need for self-defense in this context. You know, people were attacked, even the clergy who were there to exhibit and sort of be the front, you know, like the leading edge of a strategy of nonviolence, found themselves in some cases being protected by the anti-fascist group, who is often denounced. So I think we're going to have some complicated conversations about what is the range of tactics to counter these folks. Also, they've announced new rallies. I think there's one supposed to be happening at Texas A&M University on September 11th. There's one in Boston that is supposed to happen soon, maybe next week. I think they've also maybe going down to the University of Florida.
Right, lest any of us think that Charlottesville, Virginia is going to remain the geographic focus of these groups. Coming soon to a city near you could very well be these groups of fascists. And in fact, we're going to have that complicated conversation in our next story, Chenjerai. And of course, we'd love to have you back on our program. But I want to end with asking you, you know, we've talked a lot about who the fascists were, who the aggressive haters were. Give us a sense of who was on the other side. And you've talked about clergy. We know Heather Heyer was a Bernie Sanders supporter, a paralegal. But what sort of groups gathered to counter this hatred? And were you heartened by a unity that you might have seen? I mean, from the photos I saw, there were a lot of conscious white Americans standing up to this hatred.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really shouldn't be lost. And as we try to take this group seriously and focus on these sort of skinhead Nazi kind of groups, there was a tremendous resistance in Charlottesville who had been preparing for this over the course of, you know, like maybe half the year, definitely over the whole summer. And it consists of Black Lives Matter in Charlottesville, a group called Surge. Standing up for racial justice in Charlottesville. There's also a Seville Unity, which is the clergy. I mean, I think the clergy was not first, but eventually the clergy did get involved, some of the local clergy in their own way. And the groups have found ways to overcome a lot of their differences so that they could form something like a common resistance. Definitely the anti-fascists were there, and they've been a key element. So there's been a massive and very organized resistance there who has been looking at this for what it is. And so while I think a lot of people are surprised, you know, they were not. They were kind of ready. But the other thing is that even in the local businesses and restaurants, you know, I remember eating at one place there called The Local, and I saw that they had on the menu that weekend, they said, we are against this kind of hate. And also, we will donate from some of your meal to one of these organizations. So there was a real sense that in Charlottesville of trying to come together and not tolerate this.
Well, Chenjerai, I want to thank you so much for all the work you do. I'm sure you put yourself also in harm's way over the weekend, being there to document this. We're glad you're safe, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the program very soon.
All right. Thank you for having me and for, you know, having this important discussion, Sonali.
Chenjerai Kumanyika is an assistant professor at the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies. He's also a regular correspondent on this program. We've been discussing what really happened on the streets of Charlottesville over the weekend. And after this break, we will continue our conversation. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.